Good afternoon to Tessa Chatterton Shaw. It's now time for Mental Health Matters. Good afternoon, ma'am. How are you doing today? Unfortunately, you got to unmute your mic. I can see you talking.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm well. I just needed my cup of chai tea.
Understood. Yeah. It's a beautiful Sunday, and you have two guests today, a continuation from last week. I know a lot of people are interested, so the floor is yours, ma'am.
Right, so today we're going to switch it up a little bit. I'm getting straight to the point. I'm so happy to have Pamela Jones Goodrich back with us again. And last week's discussion was so riveting, so educational. And for those of you who may not have listened to it, I just want to introduce her, if you are hearing her for the first time. And so we have two guests this evening. So time is of essence. In between, just let me welcome Renee Holder. Renee, you know, it is such a pleasure to have you. I saw you on TV and you were so impressive. You left me transfixed. So
having me here today.
I thank God for two of you this afternoon. But Just let me introduce Pamela. Pamela Jones Goodrich is a trained social worker with over 20 years of experience in the field of social work, and she has worked locally and internationally, more specifically in New York, Scotland, and in the Cayman Islands. She has a double master's degree in administrative and clinical social work, and she has traversed many areas and worked with many different populations, from abused children to her present role within special needs education. She was privileged to have developed her skills in crisis intervention after she was assigned to something called a critical intervention response team following 9/11 in New York, that horrible day. I remember it only too well. And again in Scotland, when she was assigned to the child protection unit, charged with working with trafficked children, which is another issue that we are currently have to deal with, human trafficking. But children are also trafficked, and body parts are also being trafficked, believe it or not. She's the mother of a beautiful 18-year-old and a strong advocate for the disadvantaged and the disenfranchised. And that too resonates with me, Pamela, because we have to help those who are voiceless, who cannot articulate their needs, who are dispossessed, who have experienced all sorts of trauma.
Correct.
So Pamela, last week I got overwhelming response from your presentation. And we didn't even scratch the surface.
That's true.
Right. So I want to start with, so we're going to split this up with you and then with Renee, who is going to speak about his diagnosis with bipolar disorder. And there's bipolar disorder 1 and 2. I know many people with bipolar disorder. So we're going to be hearing from someone who is living with a mental health challenge and appears to be thriving as well. So Pamela, we had a discussion recently about, I called it safe touch and unsafe touch. You called it something else. And I was very impressed with how you, your take on this whole business of, you know, touching a child or children appropriately or inappropriately, but also how that could affect their mental health. So I'm making that linkage.
Yes. Well, a lot of children, a lot of persons, I think we're now beginning to recognize the impact of sexual abuse on children's mental health, because what happens is that a lot of children carry around this trauma that would have happened to them when they were 5, 6, 7, 8, even as old as in their teens, carrying around this trauma, and without the adequate reinforcements and support and counseling, what we get are students or kids with behavioral issues, and some of it are serious mental health issues that emerge, like serious disruptive behaviors, the self-mutilation, self-harming. All of this can be triggered from being abused at some point in their life. But getting back to what we talked about, what I mentioned to you was what I call secret touch. And the reason why I refer to it as secret touch, and the reason why I was taught in New York to refer to it as secret touch, is that in days of old, we always heard the term good touch, bad touch. And we,
or safe and unsafe.
Yes, we always hear that. Good touch, bad touch, safe and unsafe. But let's talk about that bad touch. If you think about the sexual experience, it's a pleasurable thing. And even though you may recognize that something is wrong, your body might respond in a way that in itself is traumatic to you, because you, it's almost as if you believe your body is betraying you by its response. So then how do you reconcile this bad touch with a pleasurable feeling? How do you reconcile what your parents or the adults around you might have told you is an unsafe touch with a pleasurable feeling? So what I've been taught, my training has taught me that when you remove the terms good touch and bad touch, because some bad touches can actually bring pleasure, and replace it with secret touch, that becomes more effective. Because anything that you have to do and keep as a secret from others that is not pleasant, then a child is able to understand that what is being done to them, that their body is not betraying them, that what is being done to them is wrong, and what is being done to them should, is something that adults would not support.
So the operative word that I hear coming from you is secret.
Yes.
Secret.
Because if you think about most abusers aren't going to go around and tell you, well, you know what, I touched you on your vagina, and you can go home and tell your mommy and daddy I did this. Yeah. No abuser is going to tell you that. They're going to tell you, this is our secret.
Right. Keep it between us.
Keep it between us. They're going to bribe you with candy or whatever they need to bribe you with. That little $5 bill that, you know, your uncle might come by and give you for Christmas or for your birthday and stuff like that. And they're going to bribe you to keep this thing secret.
They might not only bribe you, they may threaten you and say, I
correct.
Will kill you.
Correct. Correct.
I will hurt you. I have seen, I think, court reports indicating such.
Yes.
You know, not wanting to get in specifics, but only this year I read about something where two girls were, you know, two sisters sharing a bed together, and this male enters and has sex with one of them, but he says, you know, if you open your mouth, you know, you'll be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or something.
That is really sad. But what is even more difficult for me is then when we see the behavioral issues that emerge, and we choose to punish the child for the behavior. And in punishing the child for the behavior, we neglect to address the cause of the behavior.
We're actually further traumatizing them.
Yes, we are.
By not believing them, because 9 times out of 10, mothers don't believe it.
Correct.
And then we beat them.
Yes.
For something that they never asked for.
Right. And worse yet, in the instances where the perpetrator is in the household, we may remove the child from the household. Or if the child is, frequently leaves home, we take the child before the court, charge the child with wandering, and send the child to GIS. But the perpetrator stays within the home. So what is being reinforced to this child is that you are the problem. You are the one that is wrong, because you're taking this child from all that is comfortable, all that they know, from the security of the community, the home environment. They may have someone in the neighborhood that loved them and looked out for them. And you're taking this child from this and putting this child in an environment that is unknown. And in social work, we talk about the fear of the unknown. The fear of the unknown is very crippling, because if you don't know what to expect, as long as you don't know what to expect, you are going to react one of two ways. You're either going to withdraw and self-isolate, or you are going to put on that facade. You're going to put on that tough coat, and you're going to come out fighting.
So here's where aggression,
correct,
even bullying, might come to the fore.
Correct.
And it's correct. Not to say that that is the child's natural bent or natural disposition.
No, it's not. Right. And we need to revisit the thing about bullying as well. With bullying that stems from a child who has been abused, what people don't understand is a child that has been abused and has constantly lived their life feeling like a victim, when they switch roles and become the bully, this is that child saying, I refuse to be powerless to let anyone bully me. So I am going to be the attacker. I am going to get to you first, because I anticipate you will come at me. And that might not be the case, but their whole life, they've existed in a situation where they've always been the victim. So they're not leaving it to chance for them to be the victim again. So they launch their first attack, and then we label them bullies. And what happens when we label them bullies is that now they have to live up to that label.
I got you loudly and clearly.
I remember what I said last week. I don't like labeling people.
Right. So here's my question, the multi-million dollar question. How do we begin to get this right in terms of good parenting or teaching parents? Because some of them are 16 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be done to redress this situation so that children grow up as children? And I am not even sure if children today know nursery rhymes. I know some people have analyzed nursery rhymes and said, they're not so friendly after all. Jack and Jill goes up the hill and to fetch a pail of water. But there is value in reading nursery rhymes, now the first thing we seem to give to a child is a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. To me, like, everything is topsy-turvy, upside down. I was at a restaurant recently, and a young mother, to quiet her child, the first thing she does is gives the child a little tablet to navigate some game. And I'm saying, Why not hold the child? Why not, you know, put the child in a high chair, you know, as opposed to being on this virtual world that I don't think is very helpful.
What I will tell you, though, Tessa, is what you witnessed was probably not a situation whereby the mom is giving a tablet for her peace of mind. We are existing in a society whereby the quickest thing we can do is make others feel uncomfortable for just being. So it's natural for a child, if it's the child is experiencing any form of discomfort, to cry. It's natural for a child to be playful, because children learn through play. But we exist in a society whereby we make parents feel horrible, like horrible mothers and horrible parents, for a child for doing what comes naturally. So a child in a restaurant keeping noise, all the patrons in the restaurant, the majority of them, are going to look at the mom disapprovingly.
Correct.
And make that mom feel uncomfortable. And the child is just being a child.
Right.
So what strategy does mom have in her arsenal but to use the one thing that she knows will stop the rest of the other restaurant patrons from looking at her disapprovingly?
All right, Pamela, I want to say this, and I know that Oliver wants to run an ad, but there was a time whenever I traveled, whenever I went to a restaurant, I would have a coloring book and crayons and markers and every such thing. There was no tablet. But once I brought out something exciting, it came down to, so what were all of these other old-time options?
Before you answer, Pamela, we're going to take a short break and take in a word from our sponsors. This edition of Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes the things that tear us apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together.
A message from Sagicor.
19 minutes after 3 o'clock, let's rejoin Tessa, Pamela, and Renee with Mental Health Matters.
Sorry, I didn't realize that I was muted, but Pamela, I just want to say that I want to give Renee ample time as well. So I'm very cognizant that he's with us, and I want you to stay with us, but I'm going to, you know, introduce him like around 3:30, because he too has a powerful story to tell. A very personal one. So, you know, we will sort of slide into another area, which is bipolar disorder. But you continue, because we were talking about distracting our children in public spaces and the tablet versus crayons and a coloring book.
And the thing is, all the methods are pretty effective. The coloring books, I remember the time back restaurants used to actually have,
it would give you,
yes, that they actually, that you can use. I am not sure how many restaurants actually do that anymore.
They would actually give you like a menu, and they would they would give you something with a like a dinosaur, and they would give you the crayons. Because they too want to run their business, and they don't want 10 crying babies. But
yes,
I've been in those situations.
I don't know how many restaurants do that anymore. But to go back to your earlier question about how do we get parents to, you know, on board, and to, how do we teach parents these tools that they need that would help their children? And I am big on education. I am big on education. And I always say, we go to school to study everything that we need for our careers and to be a professional. You know, a pilot can't become a pilot unless he understands and knows geography. A doctor cannot be a doctor unless he understands science, you know, physics, chemistry, you know. And that this is the reason why we do these courses, because each of them build on top of each other for you to follow your career path.
So let's say I am 25, my partner is 27, mm-hmm. or my husband, and we want to start a family. What are the first things we should start thinking about?
The first thing you should, I believe, as I said last week, I believe in research. I really believe in research. So one of the things that I want to find out, and this is even before we get to the part where we are boyfriend and girlfriend, far less husband and wife. And all I think sometimes we don't do these steps first. We think of them afterwards, right? But first, I want to find out is, let's take a simple thing. Do you have other children?
Yep.
Right? And this is within the, as from the get-go, from the time you start talking to someone, do you have children? If the answer is yes, I need to have an idea as to how involved are you in your child's life.
Because if you're going to... And how many are there?
And how many are there?
And where are
if you're going to look at me and tell me something like, yeah, I have a child, but you know, the mother, don't let me see the child. I don't really see the child. That's a red flag for me. A serious red flag. Because you know what? There's something as known as the courts that you can go to and make sure you get visitation to see your child. So that's a serious red flag for me, because now I'm thinking, okay, if this is what I have to look at in terms of how you are with a child that is your flesh and blood, how would it be if I had to have one with you?
Exactly.
Right? The other thing I look at is your relationship with the females in your family. And that's important to me, because your relationship with the females in your family will determine to me how much you respect or disrespect women.
Very important. Very mm-hmm. important.
And these are the things that I don't believe that we spend enough time teaching our young people to prepare them for parenthood. You know, the other thing I want to find out is when you're angry, I'm not going to go out and make you angry. I don't believe in playing those games. But I want to see you in situations where you are tested.
And how you respond.
And how you respond. Because if you're quick to lose your cool, then that's a red flag for me. It tells me you cannot manage your emotions. And not only can you not manage your emotions, it tells me that you do not have the level of skill required to solve conflict.
Yeah.
Because not every conflict, not every disagreement should lead to raised voices and wanting to throw fists.
Yeah, that's another serious issue of domestic violence that we also need to touch on. But what about understanding each other's medical family history?
Definitely. That is very important. I need to have an idea if there are mental health issues in your family. I need to have an idea as to, you know, the full gamut. I'm not saying that because of this, I wouldn't get involved with you, but it would help you in terms of how you're going to proceed. My mom, for example, my mom has a mental health issue. As a result of me knowing that my mom has a mental health issue, when I went abroad to study, one of the first things I did was to find myself a psychologist, because it is one. While you are in your family environment, you have the support you need that will help you to manage the tough times. When you are abroad studying and it's just you, and that support is absent,
I cannot underscore enough the role of the psychiatrist and the psychologist and professionally trained counselors. And too often in small societies like Barbados, we see them as the enemy. We see them as
unfortunately.
You gotta go to your shrink. And you know, it's so wrong because we need them and they too have to take care of themselves.
Correct. And that was one of the first things I did. I sought out a therapist. Because I knew that I was alone in a foreign country, and I didn't want to take any chances.
Yeah. Pamela, I have been in that same situation, and I'm going to just tell you, like, one of my first experiences in Montreal, Canada. Mm-hmm. Here am I, 17 years old, 17, 18, entering McGill University, Montreal. Je parle français. You know, I speak French. I went there to study French. Mm-hmm. But I remember like going on campus on a Sunday and like you're walking past people. You don't know if they're students and the bitch and me wants to speak to everybody. Good morning. Hello. And like, I'm like stonewalled. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Nobody in check-in for me. Nobody in a, you know, like, now I realize I'm in a cosmopolitan city where I am just one in a millions, and that Tessa don't really count. And I had to learn to adjust to that and manage yourself in a very cold, literally and figuratively, in a very cold environment.
That is very true. I needed it more so than ever when I was in New York. My first ever panic attack occurred in New York City, 9/11. I was on the train. I got off the train with two friends and we were walking down and we saw the first train going to the tower and we were like, oh, what? That's a mistake. We couldn't figure out what was happening. And then we saw the second plane go in.
You witnessed it.
And I stood transfixed on the spot. The three of us stood transfixed on that spot. And it felt like it took 15 minutes, but I'm sure it was less than that. But it felt as if we were transfixed in that spot for the longest time before we started to run. And we only started to run when we saw the building coming down. And I had my very first panic attack in that moment because I couldn't move. I could not move. And my friend had to grab me, let's go, let's go. And I didn't know what to do. Tessa, I can tell you this now. I made it home that day. I don't know how. I have no recollection of how I made it from where I was to West 138th Street, where I lived in Harlem.
But Pamela, you know, what is also evident is that we can be traumatized by physical things,
yes,
things that happen to us in a tactile way, you know, significant life events, but we can also be traumatized by something as traumatic as a plane crashing into the Twin Towers, that you witness, and it's horrifying.
Right. And I was on my way to school when this happened.
Wow. Oliver, can we, Pamela, I know there's so much more we need to talk about, but Oliver, can we introduce Renee, or should we have a music break and play my favorite song by Griner?
We can play one, we can play a commercial and then go straight to Renee, because I love the music too, but time is moving fast. So I'm sure many people are very interested to hear what Renee has to say. So let's just take a short break. Once again, just a gentle reminder, today's the Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tear us apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together. Sometimes the darkest tonight turns into a day so bright, leaving the scars and the pain, everything that we fear behind us. Where there is life, let's keep on dreaming. Where there is love, let's find you deepening. Where there is hope, keep on believing, keep holding on.
From Sagicor.
26 minutes before 4 o'clock now, we rejoin Mental Health Matters. Yes, Tessa, I love the music also. And we are going to have an extended program today. We'll definitely extend it for at least 15 minutes. But I just want to make sure we get in the meat of the matter. And I'm pretty sure, as I said, that there are many people who are very interested to hear what Rene has to say. I'm sure he's going to help a lot of people this afternoon.
Yes. So allow me, listeners, to introduce. I see Renee Holder McLean Ramirez. So, you know, being the language person, Ramirez, I don't know if, you know, you speak Spanish or. But Renee, I will allow you to introduce yourself to the public.
Hi, everyone. My name is Renee Holder McLean Ramirez. I'm 46 years old, and one of the reasons I was asked to speak here today was because I've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder too. I also suffer from anxiety, and I have something as well, suicide ideation. And for me, when I look back at it, because these diagnoses for me came later in life, but when I look back at my early life, I can see from around 9-10 is where I could see signs where I was struggling with mental health as young as that. Actually, my first attempt at suicide was around age 9. And from there, it's kind of like a blank period where I just going through every day within life, whatever. Then as a teenager, around 15, 16 is where then I could say like my depression started to take in. And most people may just think, oh, depression, oh, you're just being sad about something. But this is, for me, and it could take the form of where I am totally paralyzed. I can't function, can't move, can't really think at times. And I go through more depressed stages. I have a cycle. I know, like, from November to April is where I'm most likely going to feel periods of being down.
Can I interrupt? Is that what they call rapid cycling? Because I have read a lot about this rapid
cycling. Yeah, so for, if you're in, and I don't want to mix it up, I'd rather professional say this than I, but in bipolar one is where you kind of go through high manics and then maybe periods of depression. In bipolar two, you may have manic periods, but there are a little bit lull. So I may be in a day, you could actually sometimes tell when I'm a bit hyper.
Yeah.
And some people like that energy. They want it. You will hear actors or someone say it helps them be creative, or creative people saying, you know, when they're in their manic state, it helps them get things done. So for me, if I'm in control of a little bit of my energy, I can use that to funnel into work.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Renee. So what were those red flags or what were those symptoms you were experiencing at 9 years old that would lead you to hurt yourself?
Well, so between a little bit earlier than that, my parents went through a divorce. And then there are other things going on as well. And I felt very separated and lonely going through all of that. They're going through their thing, and I don't really have anyone to talk to. And so I think in that age or that thing, that time, was to, and that's where in suicide ideation, it kind of like the kind of my thoughts when I'm in that state is it's best I remove myself from the whole situation. So instead of thinking like how would I deal with something, one of the things that I'm popping into my head will be, oh, I can solve a problem this and this and that way. And then that is also something that pops in my head as a solution. And when I talk about suicide ideation, I just want to say quickly, there are different states. There's a part of where you might just have a quick flash of thinking about it and there's no action or planning behind it. And then there's a level of where you actually make it and plan something. And then there's the where it's more red flag is where you are actually putting things in place to actually act on those.
And saying goodbye to people or getting rid of things.
You're getting rid of things, you might say goodbye to people. In one instance, I actually kind of spent months making sure all the close people around me were good. Mm-hmm. Making sure they were happy, everybody was well, and that there was really, in a way I felt that there was no need then for me to worry about them. So once I felt that they were good, then I could have dealt with my own thing.
Made your exit.
Exactly. And I was just feeling too, I wanted to make sure that everybody was on a good level. So when I exit, it wasn't any bad feelings. So it's a very strange, that period is a very strange moment because I think everybody was kind of surprised because everybody was so happy around me and I seemed to be happy around them. And so it was very much of a shock. That was when I was around 25.
Yeah, but you would have been 9 at that time and in primary school.
Yes. So that, as I said, my parents had gone through a divorce and we had, so this was just around, we were still, my mom and I were living by ourselves. And it just wasn't, it was very different. I was taking out my usual environment. Things were changing also at school. And I think when I look back as well, when I go into depressed states, it's usually around big changes. So like when I said earlier, when I was 15, 16, that's when you have done CXC and you were leaving secondary school or changing this type of school environment that you were in. That's when I got depressed again. So I find that when I have big changes is one of the ways my mind shuts down or I self-isolate, and that is part of it. So I think at that age, I don't know what made me, because at that time, I really didn't deal with it. Like we were talking earlier about people seeking counseling, and then at that age, I did not start really counseling at that age. I only started counseling and later on in life. But
yeah. question really though, but even not seeing a counselor, did any of your teachers in primary school pick up anything that troubled them?
No.
Or asked any questions?
No, if you were, so for me and anyone that knows me, if you see me in person, I'm very smiley. So I am always from even young, I guess when I'm engaging with people, I will act and smile and seem okay. I think one of the things, that's the thing with mental health. We have sometimes an idea of, there are some people that are functioning, are very functional. So they can get up, go to work, seem all together, get what they need done. They're highly functional.
Put on that mask. There's a mask.
Exactly. And so for me, a lot of times as well, if I'm engaging with people a lot, when I get home, I have to spend time where I have to defuse and let that off, because it takes so much energy. And these are things also too, I have to learn that to manage. So like in my mental health, because sometimes people will think, okay, you're going to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a counselor and you will be fine and you'll be fixed. And that never really happens. You're never fixed. You learn how to manage things. And sometimes even in managing things, it might not always, it might go off the rails, and it's learning how to, when it goes off the rails, get help and come back to a place where you can manage. So, I mean, I when I think of the younger me at 9, there was so much going on there and so much that was missed. If I have had some of the things or tools even younger, I may have managed better. And luckily, I think there are a lot of people now that see the value in even having young kids seek counseling and therapy. And as well, and I'm also an advocate outside of the counseling and therapy, even peer groups where you can actually talk with other persons in your age or in the same situation as you and sharing your experiences, because sometimes we do learn a lot from each other. But at that age, I don't think there was a lot of missing what was going on. And it played out in a certain way. So yes, it affected education. But, you know, in Barbados, you just think, oh, well, you're having trouble at school, in your work. They don't really link it to like what else is going on. So there was a lot of not linking that these, all these things were happening at the same time. Because I went, even at around 7, I went from being in the top 10, dropping to nearly the bottom 5 in class, and that should have been a signal to that all these things were, something was happening. And not that it was totally missed, but I think that you just think to deal with one thing, when you're dealing with that, you then you don't realize that it's also connecting to something else that's going on, and that
right
at that age really wasn't seen.
So at what age were you actually diagnosed? And I would think that you would have seen a psychiatrist, not so?
So around in my 20s, I again had another attempt, nearly very successful. And that's when I actually started then having an evaluation that this is what's going on. You're suicidal, you're bipolar, you have anxiety as well. So that didn't happen to my 20s. And if I'd actually, I in a way, I'm thankful that I survived that situation, and also at that time was given that chance where it was evaluated and said, like, this is what's going on and these are the things that are happening. So I was, when you said earlier, I had a small easy triumph, like, because there are periods where I am doing very well.
Yeah.
And then there are periods where when you think you're doing very well and you me, they if, say for instance, as a person to be on medication, and then so they think, oh, I'm doing good, so I don't need to take medication, or I'm doing good, I don't need to see the counselor as much, or I don't, and that does happen with me sometimes. I have to admit.
So you're saying there are times when you feel so good and that you stop the medication,
like you stop medication, or you stop doing the things that you need to do or did to get you where you were. And also, too, there are other things that happen where people sometimes come off of therapy. And that's because, and you had, we were talking about that earlier, you mentioned seeing counsel of the enemy, but I think also we have to discuss like all access in Barbados sometimes can be costly. And to navigate it, there's also stigma and self-stigma. So for a person sometimes going to get counseling, the first thing sometimes is the self-stigma of actually approaching the idea, because there is a self-stigma around seeking mental health. And I would say that especially for men, well, men seeking help in general, men will wait till their foot is broken.
Well, we have a whole lot of work to do in that area.
Exactly.
A whole lot of work.
Exactly.
I mean, men are biologically made differently, and somehow, and I'm generalizing that a lot of men just don't go see the doctor. They might even hear, well, you have a problem, and they wait a year later, or two years later until the problem has deteriorated to the point of death.
Exactly. It has to be really crippling or hurting for them to actually go. But yeah, so, you know, like in Barbados, there is the psychiatric hospital, there is the psychiatric ward of QH, they are psychiatric
nurses. It is ward C4. I think it's important to say that because a lot of people just don't know it exists.
Yeah. And then as well, there is, at some of the polyclinics, there are psychiatric nurses, that you can go and see. And even accessing counseling, I always, you know, you may have, for some people, there's your, if you're going to church, there's your church faith counselors. There are actually trained counselors and social workers. There are psychologists and psychiatrists. And psychologists and psychiatrists are slightly different. Some people will interchange the two, but one is, you know, able to prescribe medicine and looks at the medical side of things.
Right.
So, which is your psychiatrist. And what I would say, like, so for instance, there's some people that seeking all of that can add a cost-wise. And that sometimes people, when they've, and I've gone through that, where sometimes the expense is a bit too much and you may pull back from the type of, or the level of counseling that you make, need or want.
So you access both public and private care, or you've chosen one over the other?
For private, and the reason for that is that sometimes for me, public, because especially if you say, for instance, you just mentioned going to the QEH, you can then, when you leave that ward, use the public system. But it is time consuming in the sense of if you're ever doing outpatient at QEH, it could take a few hours before you actually see someone. And then the period that you see someone is very, very short. So you might spend 2-3 hours waiting to see someone, and then you spend 10-15 minutes talking to
them. Let me say something. And I feel very strongly about this. And I have worked in, well, there's a strong correlation between substance abuse and mental health.
Yes.
One is the chicken or egg syndrome. You know, someone deciding to drink alcohol and use drugs, illegal drugs, marijuana, cocaine, they can actually trigger a latent mental health problem.
Yep.
That was just lying there, but was never known. The other thing is, there are people who have diagnoses like yourself, but who may also decide, well, to cope with this, I don't need no antidepressant, antipsychotic. I don't need no mood stabilizers. Let me just smoke some spliffs, mm-hmm. and chill out, or drink some alcohol, right? My problem is this. When people who have mental health challenges need help, it is oftentimes after hours. It is on public holidays. It's on weekends. It's times of celebration, like crop over, Christmas, Easter, when families gather. And you actually don't want to hear any of this.
A lot of people actually get triggered during festivals and happy times. That's actually when most people have their break, actually. Because it's it's usually that type of engagement that is either triggers a memory or wholesome people. But yeah, you were saying,
can we find a psychiatrist at that point in time?
Yeah,
I'm not so sure.
Yeah. And this is also too why I was saying I am very much an advocate for as along with professionals helping you, also having peer groups. And there's not that really set up system in Barbados. But the reason that peer groups might be helpful is that even till you reach, because for me, like I remember a time I felt to a point that I was going to harm someone. And I said, well, let me check into C4. And
so you admitted yourself to C4?
Yes, but not everybody's going to, or every time that I felt that way, I did not always have the thinking to want to do that. So sometimes it's the closer people around you that can, and if you have, again, people that understand what's going on, they can see those moments and signs and say, well, okay, is this something that you need to do? Is this something that we have to say, arrange, so when you're ready to, because again, I think as well, telling people that are in a mental state to do something is not always going to work because they're not in a condition to receive the messages that you're trying. So sometimes you have to either take charge or guide them to that
state. Right. And say what you need.
Yeah.
So when you talk about care groups, you're talking about self-support groups. So other people care like group. Yourself. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. NA or AA, like similar type groups.
Right, but for mental health. So you can have mental health support groups. I think there's actually a need for that here. And when you have that, you can have that with actually a peer person that's trained in counseling so they can understand. Most They're definitely. Not just a peer, but you have someone that's trained so they can see when a person in the group. Because I have seen, well, I've lived overseas, so I have been part of these groups. And so they can see when a person in the group is starting to have spiral. And right. So then they can say, well, okay, this is bigger than us sitting down talking as a group. Yeah. And let's refer you that right. now to a professional so that they can then take charge and see if, is it a case of just maybe having some more sessions? Is it a case of medication? Is it a case of actually having to hospitalize?
Right. So I have a question and then we're going to play some music just to...
I like Griner as well.
Oh, good. Thank you. And I mean, I was just so happy to see him on another station this during the week. But how are you doing now? That's what I want to ask you. How are you doing now?
Exactly. And actually, that's a good question. And I do that as well. I always ask about how are they today or how are they right now? Because That to me is just dealing with the moment. So this moment, I am actually good. I have had a good day. I've been actually having a pretty good week. Yesterday was actually a little bit miserable because I'm doing a not eat thing today, only having soup. So, but I've actually handled it quite well. I was worried that I will be, you know, when you don't eat, you get, angry but hungry.
Yeah. What they say, a hungry man is an angry man.
Yeah, but I've actually managed today to keep in a good spirit. And and for me as well, and one of the reasons I actually, in a conversation we had earlier, talking about things helps. And so in me with talking about mental health, be it about my personally or mental health in general on the whole spectrum, has so helped me because I found that I didn't have a lot of it to talk or a lot of people to talk to. And right. So I started using my social media to talk about it. And so some things, I know some people get scared and think, oh my gosh, you're talking about this and there's something wrong or whatever. And that's fine. And actually, it's so interesting because I've had certain people that I haven't talked to in so long come up and say to me, what's going on? And then they share about that. And I even had strangers come and message me and say, well, you know, I'm going through this too. And so it has opened up a conversation for me, and it's something that I have enjoyed it because there are days where I may not even feel like talking about it, but somebody comes along and I actually start talking, and then I get out of my own head about it.
Renee, I just want to say this. I saw you speaking to Crystal Hoyt on another station, and I was so impressed with your frankness, your candor, your you didn't hold back anything. And it is so important. Your story, sharing your journey is so important, because that is not my journey. And there's no better, as I've always said in my work, whether it was HIV, AIDS, or substance abuse, I cannot speak I cannot speak to being HIV positive. I cannot speak to being a drug addict. I know the theory and I know who to refer, but there's no better person than the individual who's living it, who is coping and trying to navigate life on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So there are people close to me who have bipolar, and when they are having happy days, I am ecstatic.
Yeah, no, it's true. And as what you said, too, I have worked for years with persons that living with HIV, and persons that have mental health issues and as well, and persons that are substance users and LGBT community. And so one of the things, I talk about mental health because that's something that's it's about myself. And I've also learned the importance of giving people their mic and their platform to let them talk about their things. So, you know, as I said, so I know how mental health is for me, but then there's somebody else that I may talk to, and they might have something else going on that that is not my type of situation. Because I have friends that also have, you know, their own different struggles with mental health, or family members as well. And so when they talk about what their situation is, because all of us are, it's unique to each of them.
Yeah. So Renee, let's play Griner's song.
Yes.
We have to allow, we have to allow for callers. Oliver did say we will have an extended time. I hope Pamela's still with us, but I know I definitely want to end with I Am Alive by Red Plastic Bag. Right? Because I don't choose this music lightly. And I do believe, okay, Oliver, he's... So let's hear Griner's turn up the speaker.
Take me down the road, new and up on the road again. Take me down the road, new and up on the road again. Take me down the road, new and up on the road again. Take me down the road. Turn on the speaker, put the volume to all. Tell them play a soca song to remind me when I was small. A bass and a guitar, when melody to perform. I go play a soca song to remind you when you was small. Tell Mr. DJ, I come for the banana. I come with my big flat, turn up the festival. I remember them waving and moving. And we got jump up, raise your hand, lose yourself till you break away. Jump up and make a back on all the whole day. A line up. Turn on the speaker, put the volumes up on. Tell them play a
Music from Griner. We've turned on the speaker, bringing our time to 3 minutes after 4 o'clock. Great time for me to remind you, Mental Health Matters comes to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tears apart are the ones that unite us and bring us closer together.
A message from Sagicor.
4 minutes after 4 o'clock, as we rejoin Tessa, Renee, and Pamela with Mental Health Matters.
Well, I really enjoyed that little dance. I went to my living room and I totally enjoyed Griner's music. Love Griner. Love him. And I sent him a bunch of love because I met him last in 2019 and I hugged him. And he's very special to me. I understand that we have callers.
We do have a caller, yes.
Let's start with that. But we definitely will end, Oliver, with I'm Alive by Red Plastic Bag because it's uplifting. It's soulful. Renee, we may have to have you back.
But, just let me know.
I'm so thrilled. I'm so thankful to God that you have, at very short notice agreed to be on this program and that you're so frank. So let's take our first caller.
Good evening. You're live on Voice of Barbados. This is Mental Health Matters.
Just turn on the speaker, put the volume to all. Let those out there who struggling with something know that they're in it alone. Mr. McLean, peace be unto each and everyone. Mr. McLean, I really salute you, and I thank you very much, for coming out, because the death took some day and never even, let their feelings out. So it is good to encourage others, especially in this time where we're in society and crisis now in the world and in this country. And, the people don't know who to talk to or where to go. But, and sometimes the pride have them and don't want to express themselves. So it is very good of you, and I guess you as a young person, the others will hear you and will follow. So I missed the program because I probably went to bed early while you were on, and I missed it. But I guess CBC, if you were on CBC, I get to see it again. And Miss Shaw.
Yes, Mom.
Thank you so much. And that wonderful lady from the Beacon at the top of Government Hill, shining brightly. Members one of another. You had other programs, but I must say last week, and this one is very exceptional. And continue the good work. Mr. McLean, you continue to spread the word and encourage others that if they have a problem, seek someone, seek help. So that's very good. And I want to know if the young lady is back in Barbados or she's still overseas. Is she still based overseas?
Pamela?
I am based in Barbados.
Oh, thank you for coming back home. Thank you. Some people forget. They don't come back home. So it's still good that you come back to your roots. And I hope that you're trying to help in every way that you can.
This country gave me so much, I had to give back.
That is good. I'm glad that some don't remember, but that is very good, and I salute you for that. I'm sure I love your two songs. Griner is my boy, I know him personally. But I like Gabby. What Gabby says is a rowdy from town. So Griner and Gabby and all the others, I love Plastic Bag too. But I first say Michael, so who are drum beat first. But all
right.
Anyhow, a blessed evening, and everybody stay safe. I enjoy.
Thank you so much for listening. We have another caller on the line.
Good evening. You're on Voice of Barbados, Mental Health Matters.
Good evening to the ladies and gentlemen. First, I'd like to compliment BLD and Ms. Chatterton. Thank you for a wonderful program. Thanks to the young gentleman also. You know, dealing with mental issues, first you have to start being ashamed of it. Because I know I have friends, I either have a brother now dealing with it, and I can't say my brother has it because of brain tumor and cancer. And, you know, I don't understand sometimes, and people feel that. Like, you know what he's doing, he's wicked, he's this. But I remember the brother that I had. I used to let my friends or do anything for me. So that's an issue. And I find that people is ashamed to talk about it. People are ashamed to say my family or my brother. And it is a well-kept secret. And as the young person, the fellow, the young gentleman said, thank him for extending a lot to me, because sometimes if you want to help, you don't know where to go. And a man is not easy to take to a doctor or to take anywhere. So I thank, this is a wonderful program this evening, and the lady at the speak about university or the seas, a lot of persons don't know the stress that young persons go through, reason why they're at 17 or 18 to go to university or the seas. I wish I had a counselor that you can counsel young persons that learning go overseas, that they can have help a lot of them, because speaking to some of them suffer with depression, even suicide, and all sorts of things. And I don't know if this program, so congratulations to BLD. And then I shouted her, I obviously listened to her from where that went. Thanks to this wonderful program.
Thank you, Rosalind. Thank you. Take care of yourself. And I think it's also very important for us to recognize people from the disabled community or those living with disabilities, that they too have their mental health issues. This cuts across color, class, creed, education, faith, every single aspect of our lives. Mental health, even is our ability to focus on this program right now and to be focused, to be zoned in. And Renee, I'm so happy to hear you say that you are smiler. You know, I think I heard you say you like to hug as well. I'm a big hugger.
You know? I'm a hugger and a smiler very much so.
Yeah, and boy, has it not been hard for people like us to not be able to hug the ones we really want to hug.
Yes, right? Especially the last 2 years there were peers in the last 2 years, I think, that were quite interesting, because when it first started, I kind of actually welcomed the not having to go anywhere, not do anything. Yeah. And then as it dragged on, you started to feel that isolation, and because there's a difference when you self-impose isolation, you're like, I don't want to see anything, and when it's imposed on you.
Correct.
And that took such a toll. And I think that, you know, even for myself, and I think for a lot of people, haven't told me yet, and I'm still, you know, dealing with the effects of the laugh.
Yeah, I mean, not being able to leave our curtilage, you know, that was real hard for me as someone who hikes. I I found an empty lot of land and I said, I'm going to walk around there, man. I'm going to walk around there and get my exercise, you know, and, you know, I did what I had to do for my own mental health.
Yeah. And so, you know, I still, even when you are engaging, because, you know, if people are still trying to figure out, should I shake hands? Could I hug you? Could I give you a bump? How do I socially interact? Our social interaction has so changed. And so you have those awkward moments when you go to people, and I don't get anxiety about it, but I know people that have anxiety about that interaction.
Yeah. And next week, my guest, hopefully he will confirm, but he's going to be talking about COVID and its impact generally on our mental health, and how do we prepare ourselves to return to any sense of normalcy, because we got to prepare for that too, right? Like, how do we return to and feel safe? You know, are we going to be wearing masks for the next 2 years? I hope not. But being able to see your face right now and seeing your body language and expressions and Pamela's and all of us is key. I can't live in a virtual world forever.
That is so true. Those 2 years, that really tested my mental health abilities. I found myself slipping back to how it was when I was in New York, when I first found out that I have clinical depression, that I get bouts of that sometimes. And 2020 was my most horrible year. It took me actually shutting down social media for 6 months to find my center again.
Powerful. Oliver, where do we stand?
We are fresh out of time, young lady, but you have one caller waiting. I'd like to take her call and then final words from your guests, and we can wrap up and have our brilliant part two next week.
Well, we can't hear I'm Alive.
Unfortunately not. It's
I'm down on my knees begging.
I do understand, but we do have another program that's scheduled, and I don't want to push it.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Let's take this caller, though. Good evening and welcome to Mental Health Matters.
Good evening to your guests. A blessed evening to everyone. Hello?
Yes, Ms. Undecided. Proceed.
Hi, how are you doing? I have a question for Renee. Renee, I enjoy listening to you this evening. And what are the things that you should not say to a bipolar person?
Great question.
Actually, so for me, I don't like when people tell me how I'm supposed to feel or what I need to do. I think simply sometimes asking a person how they are today and sitting with them and listening to them is more important. Because I think, especially in Beijing culture, we have a way of telling people how they are or how they should feel and how what they need to do. So I just think generally asking a person how they are and how you can help. And what do you need? That's how I would say deal with any person and then follow that lead. And if you have someone that's in a stage of where they're really acting up, then just where you can then make those calls of saying, okay, well, I need to get professional help to deal with this, but don't act as I would say, like you have the answers to fix or solve their issue.
So how about like someone say like call you a name, you know, a bad name? How do you
So those things no. And we have a thing with that because I try to avoid. I mean, sometimes I do slip and say like, oh, when somebody acts like I would say, so oh, someone's acting crazy. I don't like saying stuff like that. Like we can't diagnose people, and we should not diagnose people. I don't label or diagnose people. So when I don't know what name you're talking about, but or what you're calling people, but I avoid from saying things like that. And even if I do know, because as I have friends and family that have their own mental health issues, but that's not my place to say that this is what is exactly going on with that person at that time. I can only see what's happening, and I can be there for them, and then let professional deal with that. And people, that's when I even talked about
people toss, self-care. If I could say, people toss around the word, he bipolar, man. She bipolar. She mad.
Exactly.
Right? She ain't right in she head. Right? True. And you know, he or she sees, she's go to a shrink. You know?
Right. They're this or they're that.
I don't that's not language. For me. We need to change.
That's not narrative. For me. Yeah, and that's not for me. I'm not trained to diagnose that. Go ahead.
What's that?
I was saying it comes right back down to what I was saying when I said I do not apply labels to individuals at all. I don't believe in it. I don't support it. Yeah. Even calling someone an idiot, I don't abide by those things. I speak to behavior, but never to calling the person. So my thing is, I might say, your behavior is not appropriate, but I would never say you are mad or you are an idiot. I do have a aversion to using labels.
Okay. And I agree with that.
Okay.
Okay, Oliver, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you for calling. So Oliver, we have to close now.
Yes, of course. It's 19 minutes past 4. We can take some closing remarks from our wonderful guests.
And then let me hear from Pamela first and then Ronnie.
Okay, I would say it was a pleasure being here. Mental health is real. And I am, the one good thing about COVID is that we are finally addressing it. It's something that seem to have been the best kept secret and shrouded in mystery and shame. And I'm happy that we have finally reached that space of comfort that we can look at this thing and recognize that it's a real condition. It's a challenge for so many people. And finally, people feel comfortable enough reaching out to get the help.
Renee.
Yeah, so again, thank you for having me. It's great to see everyone here this evening and also to hear everyone on the radio. Let's talk about it more. Let's keep talking about it. For me, talking about it has been very helpful. And as you were just saying, Pamela, COVID kind of brought up this conversation about being isolated. So the conversation started, and I'm glad that it started. It's one of the pluses, I think, of the last 2 years. So hopefully not this conversation won't just be conversation, but it will also lead to seeing more professionals, more people seeking help, more people getting involved and actually taking actions.
Yeah, Renee, I want to thank both of you for being here, Pamela. Sincere thanks. You've shared a lot with the public. I really appreciate your frankness as well about your own personal trauma and how you dealt with that in New York. Renee, this is just the beginning. I think you will be back next week if you agree. We can have two guests. The other is a counselor. I don't want to say his name yet because I need to dot my I's and cross my T's. But Renee, I don't have words to thank you enough for being here at the 11th hour and for being so open and frank and for sharing your story. But there's more that I need to ask. And being open and frank and naming it and saying this is what it is. And you appear to be thriving and doing well. Again, I wish you the best of everything in life.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Okay. Oliver, thank you. I still want to hear RPB song, but.
Well, Gregson is here, so maybe he can play it after the next program.
I'm part of Gregson's lyrical luminary, so ask Gregson.
He has to play it. I'm going to make sure he plays it for you. Okay, thank you so much, Tessa and Renee and Pamela. Okay. Have a lovely week. Take care, my friends.
Thank you.
This edition of Mental Health Matters came to you with the kind compliments of Sagicor Financial Corporation.
Sometimes it feels that tears apart are
from Sagico.